Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz to Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we're going to be covering Bridgerton, Season 4, Episode 1, The Waltz.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay! We have been feeling so Bridgerton deprived, and honestly, you know...
What a return.
What
a,
yeah. And, well, I mean, we just needed it, and after all this Outlander and, like, not happy Outlander, we hope that you are following along. And we're hoping the Outlander is going to get better too, but we are very, very excited to be doing season 4 of Bridgerton. And so we have our usual caveats, which include that there will be cursing. Probably.
Yes.
there will be, spoilers. And I am going to put this out there. I don't know how well we're going to be able to restrain ourselves from spoilers from the books.
No, we will be spoiling the book. I mean, we did that with season 3.
Right, but I think it's going to probably be worse because there are so many storylines that are going to collide this season and that set up for seasons to come that we know about from the books. And there are some plot points that are big, probably when we get to the end of this first 4 episodes, we're going to do probably some predictions for the second half. And I can guarantee that we're going to be spoiling things for the books.
Oh, for sure. Well, we would have to because we know what happens.
Yeah. So I hope that that is not a turnoff. If you haven't read the books, you should. They go super fast.
They do.
There is no, downtime reading them, and they are worth a read. Yeah. And it's good source material, and it's really fun to compare them to the actual episodes.
I find it so interesting because I've been seeing like some reviews for this season. Like, it's doing really well. Like, I think on Rotten Tomatoes it has a 90%, and a lot of people I've seen in my Instagram feed really, really love this first part of the season and are really enjoying it. Whereas with critics, I've seen like news publications being like, it's just Cinderella with sex. And it's just like, you clearly didn't know about the source material, which it's being adapted from. Right. It's an adaptation of a Cinderella story told in the Regency area with sex.
Yeah. I mean, and we're going to get into it obviously in a lot more detail. But it is interesting to see that divide. And a lot of people apparently who don't know the source material are just deeply confused. But in any case, we are going to talk about that and make those comparisons. If that's going to be a problem for you, keep that in mind going forward. We also are having fun things to drink because we get to revisit, yes, one of my all-time favorites, the Regency Book of Drinks. And we've got some great choices in here that match up really well with the episodes, at least in theme. We are starting out with First Waltz, which is very appropriate for this episode. In the Regency Book of Drinks, this is actually meant to be a punch and is got ginormous amounts of alcohol and juices and all kinds of things. I pared things down, but what it calls for is, and this is for a punch, so, adjust accordingly, 16 ounces of Jamaican rum, 8 ounces of grapefruit juice, 8 ounces of orange juice, 4 ounces of lemon juice, 3 ounces of maraschino liqueur, 1.5 to 2 ounces of simple syrup, 1.5 ounces of allspice, dram, and Angostura bitters. I think I may have forgotten the simple syrup again, which I do periodically.
Every time.
Sorry.
This is why I complain about it. And then I'm like, it's kind of bitter. And I wish there was something to offset
There's
that.
There's a lot of juice in here. Come on. I'll get you some simple syrup in a minute. But it also does not call for, but we have added some Prosecco on top. Which I think is actually really a great addition to this drink. It is not bad by any stretch.
I never said it was bad. I was saying it was bitter.
It's a lot like a mimosa.
A bit. Well, yeah. When you added the Prosecco, yeah.
Well, right. But I mean, the idea is it's like juice and rum and, whatever.
Well, rum is not in a mimosa, but
you. Well, I've had like rum-based champagne cocktails that are quite good. So... rum and juice and champagne. Also vodka and juice.
Before we get started with talking about season 4 part 1, we have watched all of it.
Mm-hmm. All of what's out.
All of what's out. And I wish we'd watched all of it, but
That's not the way
we
they're
have to wait
doing it
till
these
February.
days. So yeah, at least
But
it's January that they released it. I'm kind of grateful for that.
yeah, I was concerned they were going to wait until summer, but I'm glad they didn't. But I think they understand now that it's like you just got to get it out now
Yeah, exactly.
to keep attention. I think, I mean, obviously, I'm probably going to save a majority of my opinions on this first part until we get to the final episode of this part. However, I just like to say a blanket statement of I really like what they are doing. There are certain subplots that are like, they're not exactly bad or anything. I can see where they're going with them. They add a little bit of a sluggishness to certain episodes. However, with the main plot line, I think they're doing a great job.
Right, and I kind of feel like much like season three, the first half is really kind of doing good service to the book, the story, the actors, those kinds of things. There are, as you said, some subplots, but there are fewer annoying subplots in this season. So we do need to talk about all of that. Or in this season so far. And we do need to talk about that. So let's get started. And we are going to do this one. Unlike Outlander or some of our other shows that we have covered, we generally do Bridgerton chronologically through the episode. We do episode by episode. So one of our podcast episodes will match up with one season episode on TV episode. So this, we have a lot to say, I hope, about season four, episode one. So let's get started.
The waltz.
The waltz.
What I immediately right off the bat, and I don't want this to go back to us just describing what happens the entire time. I think there are certain parts of this episode that we can like condense into like plot lines. I think we should save Sophie and Benedict for last, but for this, just a blanket statement for this first part of the season, and I know it's going to continue into the second part because that would make no sense if it didn't. But I like that we're seeing both upstairs and downstairs because we have
Upstairs,
to
downstairs.
Lord,
No, no more time going in this.
not in this,
Although
unfortunately.
it's cute, I'll give
Imagine if he showed up.
you Bridgerton.
Either way, I like that we're seeing both sides now and that we're going to meet characters that, or like I say meet, we've met these characters before, like Footman John, Mrs. Wilson.
Yeah, it's just nice because I think, we get so little, particularly Mrs. Wilson, in the interim seasons. We got some of her in the first season.
We rewatched a few episodes.
Yeah, we did. And we get, some of Footman John in various, he's
I
sprinkled
think season
throughout the
two is where
seasons.
he gets the most
Yeah,
stuff.
but one of the things that I think is nice about these episodes is some of it feels like a return to form for some of the characters, which is nice. And of course, Footman John's an icon. We love him.
We do love Footman John. I saw something on I think it was Instagram where it was a picture of like Benedict F and like clapping of Footman John on the shoulder as he's going into the masquerade ball. And it's just said they're definitely hooking up.
I was thinking, well, we always thought he was flirting with Eloise.
Oh,
But
absolutely. He is a flirt. And I think I'm glad that they
yeah.
continued that. And we find that out later. But
Not like Jimmy from Downton Abbey. But I'm just saying.
Actually, I mean, he's just nicer than Jimmy from
Right,
Downton Abbey.
overall. But Footman John, and he has a good bit with Eloise in the first season too. So I feel like he's an icon. Saw something on one of my social media feeds about he needs a spin-off series all his
We
own.
do.
I'm like, that
We
would be
do need
super
that.
fun.
And there's some cute stuff in episode four that I want to talk about with him. But in general, I think that getting to know these characters in a different light is very nice, and I like that they're all just like nice people. And you would expect there to be like, if this was a truly upstairs downstairs show, I feel like they would have like a villain downstairs or whatever, but they don't need that for this show. For this show, you just need to see that they're regular people living their lives and this is their job.
Yeah, and I do think that that is probably unrealistic. I mean, this is We need to talk some more. So let's keep going. I do think there's some elements of the downstairs that become more obvious as things go along, particularly in the second episode of the season that I want to talk about some more.
Okay. Either way, so the family's welcoming Eloise and Francesca back from Scotland. I love when Violet talks up to Benedict about, oh, you've been debauching all summer. And it's like, it's not summer. What do you mean?
No.
When you say summer, do you mean the months in between seasons? Because that's not all summer.
It's not a school year thing. Like, so
No.
the season, the London social season, is in the spring.
Spring into summer.
Spring into summer. Like, it's basically like March to June or March to July at the latest. And then everyone goes to their country homes and they do whatever, and they stay there. Like, there's harvest, there's stuff that the people want to need to do. The guys are in town, in London, doing things at the Houses of Parliament in like winter into spring. So that's part of the reason that the season is that way. So it doesn't make a ton of sense for them to be talking about summer. This is
This
idiotic.
happened last season when
It's like a school
Cressida
year. It's
and
dumb.
when Cressida and Eloise are like, oh yeah, we spent all summer together. You mean like the 6 months you spent away? Like, yeah, that's half a year, babe. But
And so this starts out with them opening Bridgerton House. And what's interesting to me about that is, first of all, it looks like it is, in fact, summer. It's very bright, or spring at the latest. Like,
no,
already
it's
things are
definitely
blooming.
spring.
Things are already blooming, though. Like, we've been to London in the spring. It ain't like this.
It's Bridgerton, Mom.
It's
Everything's beautiful.
right. But the other part of it is they are opening up the house. So everyone's coming in, I guess, from out of town. But the way they talk about it, it's just with
Francesca and
Francesca
Eloise.
and Eloise and John coming in from
And
Scotland.
I am
So.
so sorry, but if my sister, if I have one, if my sister was like, hey, can I join you and your husband for the first 6 months of your marriage? No.
Yeah,
The
no.
answer is no.
The answer is, and should be, and should continue to be, no.
I understand that it's a long journey. They talk about it being 2 weeks long. However, after like you can spend maybe 2 weeks with me in Scotland.
A month at
Don't,
most.
yeah, a month at most to make
Right.
the trip worth your while. But 6 months plus?
Hell no.
Oh no.
Hell
And
no.
when they're coming back, and Francesca is talking to Eloise, and she's just like, oh, I'm really glad to be home. And it's like, because we'll probably get into it later about why. But actually, we'll do it right now because there's not really much of a point in separating it.
No.
Later on at the ball, masquerade ball, she's talking to John, and John's just like, oh, well, I think I'm going to make a contribution to Parliament this year so we can stay for the London season. Do you want to do that? And she's like, yes. And he's like, I noticed that you and Michaela weren't really like seeing eye to eye. You guys kind of like kept out of each other's way, and I'm sure that's probably because she thinks Michaela thinks of the castle, Kilmartin Castle, as her own because she basically lives there full time.
This is one of those things that I'm going to talk about later. There are variations from the book being represented here, and it's interesting to me. And I also have some speculation about the second half of this season and how that's going to play in. So go
We'll
ahead.
talk about that.
Yep.
Either way, she's like, yes, I'm ecstatic. Please, yes, let's stay here in London. And they'll be living at the Kilmartin House in London. And they'll make it their own and it'll be very cute and all that stuff. So she's very happy about that. Then, with Eloise this season, at least in this episode, she has resigned herself to be on the shelf. I think this is a pretty natural evolution for Eloise, because even in the books, once it got to her book, she was just like, she was about like 28 or something, and everyone was seeing her as on the shelf anyway. So she, her self-proclaiming that this early on makes a lot of sense to me with her character.
I mean, herself proclaiming it, yes. We're going to talk about what they do with Eloise in this too. And I think we just need to let it develop a little bit more. But what she's talking about is this decision. And it's not clear that she's made it as a decision. And in fact, in the books, there had been offers for her. She'd had like three or so
She does not have them in
in
this.
the, and not in the series.
The
So,
only real connection that she's had thus far with a man is
Theo.
Theo in season two. And we know how that ended. But she tells Penelope this, and Penelope's like, what? What? You can't just say you're on the shelf, right? You know that,
Right,
right?
and that comes up with Violet as well later.
Well, let's just talk about it now. She tells Violet, "I'm on the shelf," and she's like, "What do you mean?"
You don't get to just decide that you're on the shelf and you've made zero. She's like, well, no one's offered for me. It's like, you haven't talked to anybody. You won't even dance with people. What's wrong? You can't say you're on the shelf when you haven't tried. And what she says is, I don't want to try. And I do think that that is consistent with the character that we've seen on the show and some in the books too. I think what it is, and I said this when we were talking about it just amongst the two of us, Eloise wants all the things, right? Like she wants to have a home and a position and a family because she appreciates, those human elements. But what she doesn't want is to be seen as wanting it because that makes her like everyone else. And I don't think she knows herself well enough to actually be able to express that. So she thinks that she has to be this outwardly large, I don't need people thing. But if you didn't need people, why would you, in the first scene inside, talking to Penelope, say there weren't enough people in Scotland, I had to talk to sheep. You need people, you like people. You like talking to and about people. You're a gossip, just like everybody else. So you're trying to set yourself aside and act like you're not is disingenuous.
And it's funny because you see that kind of idea within her character for a majority of the seasons that we've seen. Like for the first season, everybody was trying to unmask Whistledown, and so was Eloise. She was no different from everybody else in that way of like, I have a theory, Penelope. And it's just like, and she, once Penelope's like, there are bigger problems than that, she's like, oh,
I'd be buried on this thing I'm interested in.
what do you mean, Penelope? It's like, okay, girl, come on, man. Like, you gotta be kidding. So Violet essentially tells her, you realize that you and Benedict are the top choices on my matchmaking list because you're out in society and he is about to be. So, well, I say about to be. He is in society, but she wants him to be like make a real back entrance and an attempt back in society to settle down. But that's a conversation for later. So Eloise is just like, oh, I don't want that. And so that's where we leave her for this episode. So that's all of them. Hyacinth. Hyacinth.
So cute. So, like,
Oh,
and
really quickly, Gregory's at eat.
right, and we
Hyacinth.
actually get this exposition from conversations between John, Mrs. Wilson, and one of the other like housemaids. Is she the head housemaid? I don't
I forget her
know.
name. I feel bad. Is her
I
name
do too, but
Celia?
I don't know.
Celia is her name.
Whatever.
Celia is her name. The
Okay.
other girl's Hazel from for later on.
Yeah. So they are having a discussion about where, and they mention also Anthony and Kate had the baby in India.
They have an heir. It's a boy.
It's a boy, because part of what comes up is part of how this whole conversation is occurring is they are in the drawing room at Bridgerton House. The Featheringtons have come over and brought the baby.
Elliot, he's so cute.
Colin and Penelope's baby. And so there's discussion amongst, like just whispering amongst the servants that gives us this background on the people we're not seeing, and what to expect from the people that we are. So they're like, oh, well, if it's up to Miss Hyacinth, she'd be out this season. And you then turn to Hyacinth telling Francesca, I got to lower my hems and I got to do this and I got to do that. And she's very enthusiastic. She looks gorgeous.
Oh, she
Oh,
looks
she's
so
always been
beautiful.
fantastic, which is great.
No, she really has. And I love what they're doing with her hair. It's more reminiscent of Francesca now. And it's almost like she's kind of aspiring to like have that look about her. And not that she doesn't have her, but okay. Big shout out to hair and makeup and costumes and set dressing and all that. We'll talk about that more in like my best parts and in the masquerade and everything
Yeah,
like
for
that.
sure.
Because there's so much to say. However, just in general, I was noticing when I was wa rewatching for the third time,
This is our third time
this is our
watching,
third time watching.
and it is the Saturday after the
It's okay.
release.
Either way, we're not obsessed. But
No.
I was noticing this time around that even though like each of the Bridgerton girls has a distinct hairstyle. Daphne was kind of reminiscent of what Francesca evolves into, but once she's married, she does more up with bangs
Right.
and
Yeah, she usually has little bangs in the
yeah.
front.
And then you've got Eloise who has the bangs and
Like I have
shorter
no hair.
hair.
Yeah, Eloise has a heavier bang. Although it's hard to tell with hers. Like sometimes she has like just these weird kind of sticking out all over the place updos, and then like she had a really lovely chignon with the big bangs in the second episode that I thought looked really good on her.
Oh, she looks fabulous this season. All of them do, always. Francesca does more half up, half down, but like really pinned back, half up, half down.
It's
Whereas
almost
Hi
like a roll. It's almost got like that
exactly.
victory roll on it.
It does. And I noticed that in the front. Where Hyacinth, she has kind of an evolution of that, where the bun or whatever's being held back in the half up, half down position is a lot more untamed. I noticed that in I think it was like maybe the second episode. I noticed that hers it was like curled and a little bit more untamed, which I think really does fit her. She can be all pinned up and she does like all of these things, but she's still untamed.
Right, and she is
It's amazing what you can
a
communicate with
force.
that. That's
Well,
crazy.
and I think that that's what's really cool about how those hair and makeup people and the costume people do with personifying each of the people. And they do such a great job, especially with the main family and their love interests. And we get to see a lot of and actually, I'm sorry, so I'm being unfair. Like Mrs. Danbury, Lady Danbury. Her actress has insisted on like some West African stuff, and it comes out in her costuming too. I think there are some really exceptional people working on this show, and we don't want to get so bogged down in the story that we fail to mention the production value is a big reason why we watch the show.
It really is.
And that includes the music, which I'm sure is going to come up as well.
It will. There's a moment next episode that I want to discuss.
So the they have this initial, everyone's home reintroduction of everyone, and they keep that short in a good way. I feel like they do a good job transitioning into the
Benedict's side.
where the fuck is
Where the fuck is
Benedict?
Benedict? Before we get to where the fuck is Benedict, we have two more things to discuss. We need to finish discussing Hyacinth. Hyacinth in the masquerade ball section goes and sneaks in. I don't know how she
Oh,
convinced
I
her
thought,
maid
oh my
to
goodness,
do
she thought
this,
this is
but
so cute.
she got her hair done and she has
She
a
has a
beautiful dress
tiara.
on.
She has this
She
gorgeous
looks
dress on, the
beautiful.
jewelry, all of it. She looks like a debutante.
She does look like a
And
debutante.
she
She's
looked
old
tall.
enough to be a
Right. She
debutante.
is tall
It's
too, which is.
crazy.
So she's actually taller than Eloise, which is just the actress has grown, whatever. But it is interesting that when we first see her, with the mask on at the ball, I didn't even realize, oh, that's Hyacinth.
I knew just because like there was a picture of
Because of
her at the
Eloise's
mask.
reaction.
Well, there was a picture of her at the masquerade ball and the stills that were released. I didn't realize that was Hyacinth until somebody else, like that I was watching on YouTube, pointed that out. And I was like, "What?
Whoa.
You're kidding. What? What
Yeah.
do you mean?"
What's going on here?
And what I also like about this season is that it's breaking the mold in having, and at least so far, it's breaking the mold and having somebody new debut into the season. Like we have people who have newly debuted, which are Araminta, who we'll talk about later, her daughters have debuted recently. But having a Bridgerton debut.
We are not watching any kind of debut.
Yeah.
No one's being presented to the queen in this as a debutante.
What I love about this season is how much it's breaking the mold of what it's doing
It's good.
and fitting
That's
into
good.
whatever trope that they're doing next. Either way, so Hyacinth, yeah, that's adorable. And she basically mistakenly admits to Violet that she did something wrong and she's chased upstairs.
I adore Hyacinth on every level. I don't think I've made any bones about that. And if you haven't already guessed, that's a thing for me.
So moving on to the Queen and Penelope and Lady Jambury. So their whole thing this season is the Queen is pestering Penelope for gossip and basically being like, "Dance, monkey, dance. I know who you are now, so you need to do it for me only."
Your Lady whistle down, you must answer to me,
Yeah.
essentially.
And Penelope doesn't have a choice. Literally, it's the queen. And I'm sure there's going to have to be some evolution of what she wants to do about that in the second part of the season. But at least thus far, the queen is just like dance monkey dance. And
Yeah, that's such an odd phrasing, but still.
And Lady Danbury expresses to her at the masquerade ball, hey, I want, after she gives the cut direct to Alice and Will, which is sad. There's not much to say for Alice and Will. They have a cute little bed moment. Otherwise, they are just being
They're
ignored.
cute. They are not. So going into this season, I think we had some trepidation about how much of the season would be spent on unnecessary or awkward or just background stuff with the Mondrishes. And I think one of the things I'm seeing in these first four episodes is that they're getting back to the dynamic that we really liked in season one between Will and Alice. So in season one, we had gotten to see that like Simon would go and visit them, and they had this really very natural balance of power, like both of them like loved each other for their strength kind of thing. And we're seeing that again in this. And particularly it starts out right away with that, with them in bed. It's very cute. We get to see that at the ball as well. They come as Antony and Cleopatra. Adorable.
Adorable.
And then they make like jokes about vipers. It should be an asp, but still, I'll take
We'll
it.
take it.
And so I just think that they're very, very cute, and I like that.
And they're minimal. And
Yes.
I not that I want these actors not to be in this show, but I because they are doing an amazing job, but I think that in the first season they made sense to be added. In the
Right.
second season they had something to do, but it was kind of bogged down by like a lot of other shit. Season three, they were given this random subplot that was given a lot of time that where I was like, I don't really care. And now I think we're back to a better, happier medium. They even in season one, they were featured, but they weren't integral.
Right. So in season one, they humanized Simon,
Yes.
which was important because Simon in the book was a bit,
Lonely. Didn't have
lonely,
anyone to talk
distant,
to.
foreboding, that kind of thing. And I think they let these characters, like handle some of that inner monologue for us as an audience. And I think that that's something that we see with characters in this season as well, that there's some humanizing happening for some of these characters that we need. So that was their function in season one. In this season, they have a very specific function that's more of a Queen Charlotte kind of function, but I like how it's being managed so far. If it starts taking over the second half of season four, I'm gonna get pissed. But
Yes.
we're not there.
We're
And
not
but
there yet.
again, but I will also point this out, like the first half of season three, we really, really liked. The second half of season three, we really hated. So
I wouldn't say, hey, I was disappointed by
I
it. Yeah, you hated. I was disappointed in, like, I think they had fine ideas. Like, the very, like, the fifth episode was good. And then for the rest of it, it just got a little bit worse each
I
time.
just felt like they gave the spotlight over to the subplots and then created subplots that were completely stupid and extraneous, like the whole Cressida thing. I mean, just like it was just ridiculous to me. So I'm
Well,
hoping that's not going to happen the second half of season four. We're going to
yeah.
get to that later. We need to talk about this episode.
So Queen Charlotte is talking to Lady Danbury after giving the cut direct to
This is at the ball. Now we've already skipped to the ball. There's been a whole bunch leading up to this, which included that Lady Danbury is not hosting this first ball, that it is in fact Violet who's doing it. And Violet is anxious about it. She's putting in a lot of effort. The ball itself, and I think we need to talk about what this is. It's a masquerade. It is set like it's got this kind of like constellation galaxy effect. So they have a specialized dance floor that looks like you're dancing in the heavens with the stars. There's a lot of blues and kind of like an ombre of navy up to like an aqua color. There's a lot of silver in the decorations. It is beautifully,
Gorgeous.
beautifully done. It's gorgeous. The space is so well done.
The
All of the
costumes,
costumes
the
are
masks.
amazing.
They had so many people there and they were all impeccably dressed.
Right. And so you kind of, and because you were talking about the Lady Danbury Queen Charlotte thing, we kind of, from a timeline perspective, have skipped over some of the things involving Colin and Penelope, which I'm guessing you're doing deliberately.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
So Penelope has been brought to the Queen to like basically recite her column. She comes back to the house, and you start to see that everybody's trying to feed her gossip because they know who she is now. And then starts at home, right? Like it starts with her mother and the maids and whatever. And Colin is like this incredible balance to that. And you see, like, let me distract you. Let's have sex. He's just so sweet. And their dynamic is adorable.
I do love their dynamic right now, but I still see the issues that I saw in late season three where Colin is just being shafted
He is.
and it's all about Penelope, which, to be fair, Penelope had a natural next storyline lined up at the end of season three of like what is it going to be like with her, with everyone knowing that she's Lady Danbury. Whoa. Lady Whistledown.
She's
She's not
definitely
Lady Danbury. And meanwhile, Colin is being very supportive of that. But I feel like in the part two, they need to bring Colin back more into the fold. I don't know if it was actor availability or what, but I think.
right. And I actually, at the end of this episode, you see Colin like almost being a little bit torn, like, should I help with some stuff or should
What
I
should I
stay
help
here with
with?
my
Should I help my family or should I help my wife?
Right, and he makes the help my wife choice, which we
We
respect.
respect.
But at the same time, there's a little bit of bro dynamic we're missing,
We're missing so much, and I think that
and family
they
dynamic.
try
But they
to.
try in later
Yeah, I was
episodes.
about to say
So.
they try in later episodes. However, I think that it's bizarre that like there's a moment with Colin and Benedict when Benedict is walking through the after like
Ball.
the unmasking, he's walking through the ball. And Colin's like, I haven't seen you in an age. It's like you live in the same city. How have you not talked to each other? And to be
Because
fair, like,
Benedict's busy,
and
and
so is
we haven't talked
Colin.
about anything involving
And we'll talk
Benedict
about
yet, but we
that.
need to get to it.
Either way, Lady Danbury is talking to the Queen. The Queen has at this point decided, all right, I'm not going to do a diamond anymore. No. I'm going to try to champion a suitor so that everyone can go after the suitor.
Or the
And
suitor can make it interesting for her to watch what how do guys approach this?
because she's been so disappointed with the diamonds of the past.
Because the way she's very familiar with how women have to interact with the Ton. She really has not seen it that much from a guy's perspective. And she certainly hasn't. I mean, as the queen, you never see that.
It's true.
So I think this is an interesting viewpoint for her to take, and I like that.
I like it too.
It's definitely not from the book, just for
It's
those of you
not,
who
but
know.
I think
I
that
like
it's a
it.
fun evolution. I think last season they were trying to do something different with the sparkler thing. I don't think that's as good of an evolution as this
No,
was.
this is better.
This is so much better.
This is definitely better.
And either way, because in season three, they just kind of rehashed what they did with Daphne in season one. Meanwhile, in this season, they're like, all right, let's try a guy now and let's
Well,
see
like
here.
season two had a lot of the same shit. It's like if I'm with them, let's move on.
Yeah. And so she's chosen Benedict, even though Penelope's like, maybe don't do that. And she's just like, no, I'm doing
No,
it.
wait, and Penelope's thing is, I know Benedict, and she does, and we're going to talk about Benedict. Those of you who have watched this show, we're at season four. You already know, like, Benedict is a hoe. So they call him a rake, whatever. He is what they call a fuck boy. And he is. I mean, he will have sex with anything, anywhere, all the time. And
Yeah.
so for Penelope, it's like, he's not settling down anytime soon because he's been just, getting more and more out there. And the queen's like, I'm betting you anyway. How much do you want to bet? We never hear what the actual bet is, so whatever. But Penelope doesn't, she is hesitant to write about family again because, again, the Bridgertons have been in the column a lot because she's, obviously been in love with Colin all this time. But that she's reluctant to do it. There are reasons why she does going forward. So, can we move to the actual main plot?
Well, after Lady Danbury discusses that she wants to go back to her homeland.
Okay, she discusses it. The queen says no.
Yes.
And clearly, this is an element of contention between the two of them that will be repeated, repeated, repeated for very long periods of time.
As it often is.
Yeah.
Either way, I kind of like that idea. Well, I was just going to say that I like the idea of
Even
Lady Danbury doing whatever the fuck she no,
wants.
I agree. She's her own woman. She can do whatever the fuck she wants. However, I also think that it's a good idea storyline-wise for the because we know what the next two seasons are going to be. They're going to be Eloise and Francesca. In what order, we don't know yet, but they're going to be Eloise and Francesca.
Well, and how they're going to actually, like, I assume they're probably going to try to make them more London-based, which neither of their stories is London-based. So.
It can't be only London-based, which is the problem. And I'm curious to see how they manage that. However, either way, Lady Danbury does not play a large role in either of those stories, or any role for that matter. I don't think she even has a line in those stories. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I remember. And so Lady Danbury doesn't have anything to do with those storylines, which wasn't an issue necessarily with like Antony and Kate's story. They just like made Kate one of her wards or whatever, or sponsored her. But I think that it makes sense for her to take a step back in those seasons because she comes back full force for Hyacinth. And so what I'm thinking they're probably going to do with that, and I'll discuss that in episode 4, but I'm assuming they're going to have her visit once for like one episode
Of each of their
of each of their
seasons.
seasons and then return back to, is it Sierra Leone? I believe.
It might
I
be.
think it is. I might be wrong. I haven't rewatched Queen Charlotte in a
I
while.
haven't either.
However, either way, she's going to be traveling, and so that's honestly even more information than we can like have fun with that. But either way, I think it makes sense for her to take a step back, and I think the way that they're doing it makes a lot of sense if you've seen Queen Charlotte and all that stuff. Either way, let's get to the meat of the
We're
episode.
talking. We are here for Benedict. So
Hell yeah.
Violet, right off the bat, is like, "Where the fuck is Benedict?" Because he has not been engaging with the family in any meaningful way. He is supposed to be the replacement for Antony while Antony is out of the country, and he, I guess, sort of is being responsible for that. We get to see a little bit of that in this episode, and I have thoughts about that, and I'm going to talk about it.
Go
But
ahead,
it
talk about it.
start well, but no, it starts with her going to his lodgings, and she's like, "Let me in there." So there's a guy there that it looks like he's his valet. He might be a personal secretary. He might be Antony's personal secretary. I don't fucking
I
know
could
what the role of this
totally
guy is.
picture it being the private secretary or personal secretary coming to see Benedict and be like, "Where the fuck are you? It's the middle of the day. I need to talk to you about important shit." And him just like looking around his apartment, his bachelor lodgings, being like, "What the fuck is going on here?"
But he knows what's going on there. So he acts more like a valet. When Violet shows up, he stops her. He's like, "Oh, the room's in disarray. We'll have a ladies' maid go in there." Like, he knows that Benedict is in his bedroom with some women's, and he
I
is.
can imagine that he has walked in on many a time.
Well, whatever.
And
So
so I think it's either valet or
he's got to be a personal secretary because of his role later. Anyway, so Violet barges into the bedroom. There are naked women in the bed, on the couch, and she's like, "What is going on here?" And Benedict's kind of trying. He clearly has gotten away with being the cute boy for a while. Like, he's just like, "I have this engaging smile, see?"
literally, there's so many times where and I'm so grateful for this. Can I just say,
Yes.
I think that it. Okay,
Luke
how do I
Thompson?
explain this? No. I love Luke Thompson. This is not what I'm talking about. What I appreciate the writers for doing is not changing Benedict's character completely for the sake of this story, because I think that they did a little bit too much with Colin changing him for his season, because if I'm being honest, like Antony, it was a pretty clear like point A to point B, that's Antony Bridgerton. That's how he is all the time. Colin, however, he was a little bit more carefree in the early seasons and a little bit more naive. Obviously, there was going to be some evolution, but they really turned him into a rake, which I don't think really fit his character as much.
Well, it's
They were
certainly.
trying to make him turn into a rake. I think that they just are addicted to having reformed rakes for husbands, and they've even mentioned it in the script.
Well, and I want to inject this too. We are very familiar with the books. Colin in the books, yeah, he's probably screwing around with them. That
Definitely.
is not a theme for him. That is
No.
not a major focus of his character at all. It is not in his writing. It is not like anything that they have portrayed it to be on the show. And so that he's much he is in the books closer to what he was with Marina than he is in season three. And so that's really the frustration I think you're seeing.
What I think, and I think that they made amends for it by having that moment in episode four of season three with him being like, why are we joking about things that actually matter? And for him to like have that stance more.
Right. And I think they made it out to be like he was trying that character on, as opposed to, Benny just, we saw it as trying that character on somewhat earlier, but now he just is that guy. Like he is, like Mr. Experimentation on all levels kind of thing. And it's, I think it is one of those second son tropes probably in British society,
But it's
that
something
he's
that
trying to
has,
embody.
yeah, but it's also something that has been established since the first season that he's a bit of a hoe. And we knew that from the very start. And the fact, and like, obviously they're going to continue that, but I also like that they have maintained his sense of humor about it as well.
Yeah, he's like, oh, but can I charm my way out of it, right?
Yeah,
Like,
that's
so
always been
he
him.
tries that with Violet right away. And later on, when he is at Bridgerton House, which is where the office is, Antony's always kept his business office, the where he does all of the transactions for their estate, and for Aubrey Hall and all that stuff, is in this office at Bridgerton House. And so Benedict is in the office, and he's got to be private secretary, is there telling Benedict what to do about various investments. And that to me is private secretary of Antony thing, because what he even says is like, the Viscount would do this, the Viscount would do that. And so it's very clear to me that this person that was appeared to be a valet at they're consolidating characters is what they're doing, because they just didn't want to hire a separate actor, which I can understand, because the business end of it is not something that's ever really the focus of Bridgerton in, in the books or in the series, other than maybe in the prequels in Rugsby.
It, a
But
little bit, but it's just because the characters are interested in it. It's not because of a duty or anything like that. It's what the characters are actually like invested
interested in.
in.
Yeah, so
And so obviously Benedict is not that,
yeah,
but
Benedict is not there, and he's like, okay, I'll do whatever you tell me.
it is building off of something that I was wondering about last season of like, how is Benedict doing being like the temporary Viscount
He's
while fucking
apparently doing
Antony's away?
fine.
He's doing fine, but it's obviously like the personal secretary doing all the work. But I mean, we all knew that. But we knew that from the beginning. But I think that it's finally answering a question that I already had. So I do appreciate that.
I think it's, the real question that you have is like, how can we be here without Jonathan Bailey? Which
Jonathan
is
Bailey will
true.
return for part two in Avengers Doomsday. It
Yes.
will be fine. Either way, I mean, I as much as I would want Antony to be here, I think they have made do without his presence.
Right.
I
So,
think that including Violet as much as they are makes a lot of sense for this story. No, knowing what I know from the book and how involved she is in the latter half, I think that it makes a lot of sense. So I don't have an issue with that. I wish Antony were more a part of things, but honestly, in the book, he really isn't.
No.
They have talks, but it's not like main.
I am okay with Antony being a minor player in this season. I wasn't as okay with it, in his own season. Well, honestly, but that's a separate discussion that you see our series two thing. So getting back to what's happening with Benedict, Violet reads in the riot act like, hey, you need to step up, be part of this family, like really be part of this family. This, chart your own course thing is bullshit. You need to find yourself a wife, and act like
Yeah.
you're one. You are a Bridgerton because you are a Bridgerton. You can't escape it.
What I do appreciate from this conversation, though, is that even though he's obviously losing the argument, he does make this not a claim or anything, but it's just like, I don't like what society is forcing me to do. It's very similar to Eloise, where he doesn't like the confines of society and he obviously wants to do something different, like you said, but we see what that would look like for him throughout this season. It's not just like, no, and then we're going to only focus on like this other shit. Like, it's not like he then meets a nice society young miss or whatever. He does meet someone a little bit lower. And so
As somebody who's outside the confines, and I
yeah.
think that that's the most important thing to him, someone who approaches it from a different angle, more of an artist's angle, because that's something he
Yeah.
even said to Anthony in Anthony's season, like, you need a different perspective. And you know, that approaching it from a different perspective is very consistent with Benedict's character. I
Yeah,
think
it's what he's been doing since the beginning. I
right.
see.
I think that his mother is right, though. Like, you're still a member of our family.
Expected to do this other stuff because of society.
It's part of who you are. You have always been, you've always thrived on interactions with your siblings. I mean, you have always been more of a family person than you acknowledge. And I think that that's what she's trying to get him to recognize. She doesn't say those words.
No, I definitely think that's true because I mean we've seen it throughout these seasons how much he is intertwined with the family,
Right.
and we get to see it even more later this season. But
Right.
I really do appreciate that that's what she's more harping on. I mean, like she's harping on the expected stuff, but she also mentions the family.
Well, and she's kind of like, look, I'm hosting this ball.
Don't embarrass
Don't
me.
embarrass me. But she also says, you've got two sisters that are expecting to get married. No one wants to marry into a family that's got like this kind of craziness going on because, it's all out there, people know. And you need to calm down. It's one thing to, do this when you're really young. You're not as young as you were. So she's like, look, show up for the ball. And he is late for the ball because he is at a den of iniquity having sex with a guy.
A
And
quickie,
a
if you
quickie.
will. Even though it took him like 2 hours. Like, okay, man.
So he's late for the ball. And the ball itself, we haven't really described, but we do get to see there is a lady in silver. And they don't introduce who she is. We're
I
not
love
supposed to
that.
know who she is. Obviously, we already do because we've read. But they have this beautiful woman in silver, and she's basically
Oh my
like hyping
God.
herself up to go into the ball, and she's getting hyped up by her footman.
And now is the moment to discuss, first of all, the icon that is Alfie.
No. We don't want to do a full Alfie until
No, I'm not going
episode
to.
two.
I'm not going to.
I do
But
love him.
Alfie is the footman, but I loved him from the first episode. However, this is also a great opportunity to begin with our the incredible coverage that will be about Yeren Ha as Sophie Beck.
She's great. So
She is
I'm going to tell you
fantastic.
right now,
I
if
love
you have
Sophie.
not listened to our series on the books or several series on the books,
I always loved Sophie.
Natalie has always loved Sophie, and she's Natalie is much more of a, oh, I love Cinderella as a story. I love Cinderella in general. I am not against Cinderella, obviously, but I like a little more spunk. The way they have written Sophie
So
has
good.
that, and part of the reason that she has that is what I was discussing with having the Mondrisches for Simon. She has characters that she can bounce off of, so we get a much greater sense of who she is and how she is. She's very self-possessed.
Oh, yeah.
We don't see that as we see it some in this episode. We see it develop over the next several, and I really love that she is not the timid person that she seemed to be in the books. I think that's really
I
good.
also love seeing her quirks. And you know what? I have gone on record. I'm sure I've mentioned it on this podcast, so it has gone on record that I am not the biggest fan of quirky characters. When they're overly
Eloise?
quirky.
Eloise?
To a certain degree, yes. I think they've tamed her a little bit, like enough for me to at least appreciate it. And it's nothing against Claudia Jessi that she's being directed that way, that she's made a choice and they've stuck with it, and that's fine. I still think she's a great actress. But adorkable characters do not do it for me. I love what Yeren Ha has done with Sophie, where she has these awkward moments with it feeling so human and not like a caricature of like someone being quirky. And I think that that's so important because she doesn't know what she's doing. We find out later why, but she has never been to a ball before. She doesn't know how to dance. She doesn't know
She doesn't
that.
have a dance card. Like,
Yeah,
and
she
she
doesn't know about
knows, like,
insects.
intellectually that they exist, but she doesn't really know how one is supposed to behave with them. She does. She's showing up at a ball without an escort. I don't know that she's ever attended a ball or seen one. I
I don't
don't
think
know
she
that. I
has.
don't know that where she's been living that that's a thing. So, that her ability to fudge and make it look like, hey, I know what I'm doing, is really.
Endearing.
And it's endearing, but it's really kind of cool that she's like stepping into it that way, as
Yeah.
opposed to coming into it like I'm a wallflower. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just so uniquely human and not
Yeah.
like it's not relatable where it's pandering relatable, like they were trying to do with Eloise in seasons past. But in this version, it's like she'll trip and then she'll look around and be like, no one saw that. All right,
Yeah,
good.
I'm good. It's
Yeah,
like,
no, literally.
yeah, okay. But she is, and of course, we didn't mention she's fucking gorgeous. Okay, they do put her in amazing costumes, which, you know, okay. We expect that from this show.
Oh, the gown's gorgeous.
Yeah, the
And
silver gown is beautiful.
I
The
will,
silver
the
mask is
mask, I was
beautiful.
going to mention the mask. The mask, I think, is the perfect size. I think that
Yeah, people bitch about that online, don't
I
they?
don't fucking care.
It's
I
strange.
think that if they did a demi mask, it would completely ruin
Yeah.
the point. And so something that covers up half her face makes a lot more sense. And I actually watched an interview with Yaren Ha because I, of course, I went down that rabbit hole because naturally, also
Okay.
these actors, all of them act like best friends, and it's my favorite thing in the world. However, she talked about how difficult it was to act with that mask on because you can't see your cheekbones. You can't see that you're smiling other than your lips. So there's a lot of lip acting involved, a lot of eye acting involved, and no eyebrows were being able to be seen. And so it's really hard to
Well,
do
and
facial expressions
you
like
have to
that.
do it all with your voice and your lips and
Yeah,
stuff like
and
that.
she
That's
does
really
it
cool.
beautifully.
Well, or other parts like your hands or like how you tilt your head, you know, those
No,
kinds of
she does
things.
it so well,
She
and
does. It's beautifully
she
done.
adapted really gracefully, and I really like
I
that.
want to point out, and I don't have a ton of the actress who played Cho Chang in Harry Potter
Yes,
is Arame.
Katie Long.
She's
Oh,
talk about gorgeous and amazing.
oh my God.
But one of the things that I found super cool from a costuming aspect is the mask they used for her. So
Oh,
they
the
used
one
one
she
of
holds.
those stick masks, but it's sheer. And it's like, oh, that's
And it's
clever.
like amorphous. And it's,
Yeah,
oh, it's so
it is
cool.
very cool. It is
Oh, it's
unique
so
to
cool.
anybody else in that room. And it's
Speaking
got a little bit of evil. It's like, oh, that's neat. It's
of
all black,
Araminta, we
by the
see a
way.
little bit of her before we get to see any more of Sophie. So Araminta is a now twice widow. And
Lady Penwood, the I guess the Dowager Lady Penwood.
yes, she is. And she has two daughters, Cosie and Rosamond.
Rosamond's evil.
Rosamond is evil, and she has her sights set on Benedict Bridgerton because reasons.
Thinks he's entitled is the
No,
problem.
she absolutely does, and they show that even in the costuming. She is
Yeah.
dressed as Marie Antoinette, and you have Posey on the side who's just really happy to be there. I love Posey, and I
And
do
Posey
like,
just chatters away, which, you
yeah,
know,
but
I
that makes sense for her.
it does make sense for her. She's very socially awkward.
I think that she's
But she's,
the.
again, both of these girls are unbelievably
Oh, they're
gorgeous.
so pretty.
And of course, in the books, they try to make it out like Posey's less attractive. Not true in
It's
this
not true in
series.
this season, and I'm glad that they're doing that because I'm glad they're not doing like a repeat version of like the Featheringtons where it's
Yeah.
like, well, you're not as pretty as these girls, so we're not going to pay attention to you.
Yeah.
Whereas in this version, there really is no reason other than personality, which she seemed to have figured out from, or Araminta seemed to figure out from birth that one of them would be destined for greatness compared to the other. But as time has gone on, she's obviously put all of her eggs in Rosamond's basket. Whereas with Posey, she is more socially awkward, but she's still like gorgeous and could easily get like a Mr. Cheddar on her side, like a very nice mis guy like Mr. Finch or something that can match her personality and balance her out. Whereas Araminta doesn't put any stock in that. She just immediately dismisses her out of hand.
Yeah.
And so what I love about this is it's not only a slight to Sophie, it's a slight to Posey as well. And I'm glad they're showing that
Yeah.
because in the book it is prominent. how much she ignores Posey. And I'm
It's
glad that they're,
horrible.
I, oh, it's so bad.
It's horrible.
And there's even a line in the book where Sophie's talking to Araminta and she says, "This is for not loving your daughters equally."
Yeah.
And she points that out. And
I'm
I think
hoping
that,
that
like,
comes up.
I want that
Because
too.
again, that is so end of the book and
I
so
know it is.
end
We'll talk about it
of
later.
this season, I hope that it should come up later. But I
But
think
they're
you know,
setting it up,
that
and I'm glad.
they are.
Either way, so she introduces herself and her
To
daughters,
Violet.
even though they've clearly
And
met before, but like not
a
like
long time
officially.
before. So I think that part of how this is handled with Violet, it's kind of like you see it on Violet, and God, I just
Ruth
love
Gemmell.
Ruth Gemmel is
Talk about
amazing.
Violet. Very brief
Holy shit,
interlude.
she's awesome.
She's amazing. I love her.
Me too.
Violet is fully going full steam ahead with Marcus. Is that his name?
Yes, it's
Yes,
Marcus.
I'm
Marcus
good. I'm
Anderson,
glad.
Lord Anderson.
Lord Anderson. I'm going to call him Marcus. So we're on a first name basis now. I've seen your ass. Either way, Marcus, spoilers for later. But Marcus, she's going full steam ahead with him. He even like is kissing her wrist in private.
Well, we've
It's
seen his body double's ass, so
no, I think that's him.
it probably is him.
We saw his chest bump. That's him. Either
Sure,
way.
that's how that works.
Either way. I really like that she's doing that thing, but it's kind of like a secret. Either way, she's doing that thing.
Well, but I think one of the things, and we had I had particularly, and I do have an emotional issue coming from the books about Violet getting involved with somebody. Because honestly, the books are very, very clear that she never felt like she needed to. Like she was so happy with Edmund, she was so happy with her children, she didn't need it. And I do think that that's possible. I do think that that's real. I really didn't like a lot of the stuff they talked about in Queen Charlotte about this, you know, when oh, Violet needs a man. And I didn't like last season when they started this, in part because I really didn't like the lead up with Marcus. I felt like they
I didn't like
didn't
the lead
develop
up.
him as a character very much. They've actually reduced, he says very little, he just does stuff, and he's super
And we
cute
like
when he
that.
does stuff. So maybe he's just like better as a man of action. We'll just leave you as a man of
I
action.
like that. And I do agree. And I think there is still a possibility in the
Don't
storyline.
kiss my man.
Well, she doesn't ask, he just does it, which is even
The
hotter.
inside of her is holy
Oh,
shit. Yes.
hot. Either way, I think that there's still a possibility for that storyline to end up being, can we be fuck buddies? Because I think that it's very natural for a woman who has not had physical intimacy for that long and had
To
gotten
want it,
used to quite a bit.
obviously.
Obviously, she had eight children. And we know not all of them came from sex. Well, okay, no, that doesn't make any sense. No, they didn't have
All of
sex
them came
only
from
eight
sex.
times, is what I meant.
Yes. Okay.
All of them did come from sex. Shut up, I know. Anyway, so I think there's still a possibility where like they're putting so much emphasis on the physical aspect and less on the emotional aspect that I think that it's stop stop laughing at me. But I think there's still a possibility for her to be like, I really like you and I like what we do together. You're not
But
going to replace my husband.
I like what we do together, and that's true. And I don't know how this is going to play out. I think one of the things that I would not like if they ended up being fuck buddies, I would not like that in part because you know, I don't like the being a rape business. I don't like that with guys, and I don't really like it with women either. So I'm kind of reluctant to see Violet that way because I think Violet is better than that. So we're gonna have to see how it plays out. I'm not making promises one way or another. We need to talk about Yuren
Oh,
Hah, and we need to talk about this fall.
can I just say, this is like the most gorgeous woman in the world.
Unbelievably beautiful.
Like they put very minimal makeup on her.
That's not true.
No, it's pretty true for the maid looks that she's
Of
not wearing
course.
that much makeup, and she's stunning.
No, she's no. You are mistaking for amount of makeup for shades chosen, which you know She's given more nude shades as opposed to the warmer or the brighter pinks and stuff that she's
Let
given.
me put it
But
this way. It doesn't take a lot of makeup for her to look even better than she already does.
she looks amazing.
I would also like to say that compared to the people that we've seen, like the higher society people having these really dramatic makeup looks, like Penelope did last season, like highlighter to the gods and like full face, like full beat. Compared to that, she has very a lot less, but it doesn't take away from her beauty
Well,
at all,
right.
in my
Same. I mean,
opinion.
I do think you'd probably be shocked about how much makeup any of these people is wearing, but I do.
I've done stage makeup, Mom. I
I
know
know.
what it takes.
Right. But I think from a styling standpoint, and I'm going to use this as an example, well, let's talk about Penelope. So we see her in various types of makeup, like the makeup she's wearing when she's presented to the queen at the beginning. Is a beautiful day makeup for someone who's got kind of an ingenue look, which she really does well. And it looks really beautiful on her, and probably, in my opinion, looks better than some of the more dramatic stuff that she's worn in other episodes and seasons. But you need the dramatic for like masquerade ball, you know, all of those things. So, what I think is interesting about Yiren Ha is she has such a range of beauty that she can do a little and a lot and do it really, really well. And that's not true for everybody. Like, I don't see Hannah Dodd that way.
Oh, Hannah
And
Dodd also. Oh, sickening.
all of them are
Sickening.
unbelievably gorgeous. But the reality is, like, you put very little makeup on
A supermodel.
a supermodel, they don't look the same. And I don't think that Yiren Ha is somebody who is hurting, you know,
She
in
doesn't
that.
need that much, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, she,
I don't think
and
she really needs any.
honestly, if you put too much eye makeup on her, I think she'd look terrible.
Well, I mean, that's also just
So,
like,
and
I think that they
I
have
think that's
tailored things
true.
to her face that I think make a lot of sense.
Right.
And I'm glad that they have taken that care. Either way, just regardless of looks, she's absolutely stunning, obviously, but she also just delivers this performance in such a convincing way to me of like this, because when you're reading the book and you hear that, oh, she's just like emanating joy
Yeah.
and like has this different aura about her, you don't necessarily, I didn't know how to picture that exactly, other than someone just smiling and being like very happy. Whereas with Yeren, she doesn't have to always be smiling to emanate that joy and her appreciation for being there. And I think that that's so important. And I think she does it in her body language. I think she does it with like
The
the,
spotlight. The
yeah,
spotlight helps.
it certainly does. Either way.
But no, I do want to say this about what we see with her. So she, when Benedict first sees her, because of course he's late, he's made to talk to debutantes. He's basically like, oh my God, can I get out of this?
We get a lot of what he, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we get a line that's very specific to the book of, oh, you're number two, which is like his Achilles heel.
Right. So like, these girls are recognizing him as a Bridgerton. They don't know which one. They call him number two. He's like, oh yeah, that's my name. You know, like, but they don't get the sarcasm. And you know, they're so dumb. These girls are so stupid. And
Vapid.
this is what he's expected to like engage with. And oh, you're supposed to be interested in these people. I understand why he's just tired of it. But when he catches sight of Sophie, she is doing something that she does throughout these four episodes. She's looking at the ceiling. I happen to be a person who likes these elaborate ceilings that you see in some of these houses anyway, which is elaborately decorated with chandeliers and it's glowing. But you know, you're also in this constellation environment. She looks at constellations a lot. She looks at stars a lot. This is a theme for her, to find joy in
The little things.
the little things, the reflections of nature,
Things
just
that make her feel smaller.
well, and but things that also help her to embrace bigger stuff. And that's part of the conversation she ends up having with Benedict when she is actually out on the
But before we get
gazebo
there,
with him.
we have to
Yes.
have their first interaction ever, which is
Yes.
extremely adorable.
So, and I love this because both of them do think small things. that are clues to their approach to this environment. So she's standing there looking like, oh my God, this is the most beautiful space I've ever been in, which I can see that. This guy approaches her to dance, who has been identified by Penelope to the queen as a
Being
boy
rather
god.
dull.
Yeah, he's Lord Napier, which all I could think was Evelyn
Evelyn
Napier
Napier.
from Downton Abbey, and he's just a little boring, which is how Mary in Downton Abbey approached him, or described him.
Unfortunate.
True, but in this guy's also a good-looking
He is a
guy.
good-looking guy.
But he approaches, she's like, hey, you want to dance? And she is tucking her dance card into her glove.
Which
And
she never got tied on because she doesn't have a chaperone to do it.
right, but that's not why she's tucking it in there.
No,
She
we
doesn't
know
want
why.
to dance with him.
Well, she doesn't want to dance, period.
Right. And Benedict sees it and he thinks like she is putting this guy off. And so he rushes in and he's like, oh, I just found this lady's dance card. And it looks like I'm the next guy. I gotta dance with
Which
her.
is straight from the book, except for the hiding the dance card thing.
Yeah.
But I remember in the book, she's just kind of like, these guys are swarming her because she's amazing and gorgeous. And they're just like, hey, ready to dance? And this is like, it looks like I'm the next guy on the dance card, so fuck off.
It's
It's my house. And obviously, she actually does not know who he is at this point. And so she's just like, why did you rescue me like that? And he's just like, well, I mean, you didn't really seem like you wanted to dance with him. And I mean, why not? And so he's trying to ask her questions like, what's your name? And she's just like completely dodging it by changing the subject. And
And then the music starts for the dance. And she's kind of like, oh, I gotta go, whatever. And he's like, wait a minute. And then she finally, and did I do something wrong? And she's like, no, I just can't. I don't know how to dance.
And he's like, oh, is this what the thing you're
The
putting
costume
on?
that,
Is
like
this
you're
a
just,
persona?
you're a silver ingenue, doesn't know how to dance. Is that
And
part of
she's
this?
like, you've
You got
seen through me.
it. Yeah. And I love the fact that she doesn't, oh, yeah, you're seeing right through me. That's the way it is. And
And then
then she,
she's like, okay, so what's your persona for the night? And he just goes, I guess that of your dancing teacher. Smooth as hell.
oh yeah,
Smooth as
their
hell.
conversation is adorable. And she's like, I'm not sure that people want us like having a dance lesson in the middle of the dance floor. And he's like, well, we could go to the private terrace.
Because he's
and
avoiding Violet coming by and
well, and then
making it about her.
she sees Araminta and she's avoiding Araminta. And we are gonna get a lot of
We're gonna
backstory
find out
later.
why later.
But she's like, holy shit, I gotta get out of here too.
I
And he's
gotta
like, I
go.
have to trust you for a night. Let's go.
Oh my gosh. I think that the writers did such a great job in writing these scenes because it's so important because it leaves such an impact on Benedict
Yeah.
for like, and for both of them, really.
Really.
So that they constantly think back to this moment and this meeting and what
Well, how do
happens at
you
this
remember that?
dance.
And I'm glad you pointed out that it was Benedict. Like, so I guess it has an impact on Sophie. We expect it to, because this whole evening is
Is
out of her
impactful.
norm. This is his like regular
Awakening.
everyday thing. So something has to actually penetrate the haze.
Yeah.
And the way this interaction happens is unique to what we've seen him having with all the other people in every situation he's been in. So that's season to season. Like, he has not had this kind of meeting of the minds banter with anybody. So it's really kind of great. They go outside, they're giggling. They go end up going outside as opposed to they go up to a balcony that I think was supposed to be the private balcony. There are a bunch of people up there. They go to the balcony. All these girls are like staring at him, which is why Queen Charlotte's like, hey, I want him to be my suitor of the season, whatever. And then they sneak out to a gazebo in the backyard, which may or may not be the
Sex
gazebo
gazebo.
where Auntie and Kate had sex.
It
Not actually
entirely,
where.
it's entirely possible that it is.
It makes sense. So they go out there and they have this really adorable conversation about how both of them feel like imposters. And she's talking around stuff like, she's kind of like, oh, and he's like, well, who are your parents? Mother and father. Like
So funny.
he is wanting to get to know more about her.
It's not being cagey about it though. She's being
Oh, yes, she
playful.
is.
Well, no, she's being playful about the way that she's
She's
delivering it,
being
though.
playful about the cajun.
Yeah, she's being playful about the caginess, which balances Benedict out a lot because Benedict is being really nosy. I mean, respectful amount of no nosy to be fair, but he's trying to just get the basics out of her, and he's not. If she were being like, I don't know, a mother and father, and if that was how she was reacting to it, he obviously. This version of Benedict would be like, okay, I'm not interested in you anymore. But the fact that they're being playful with each other and laughing about it, I think
Yeah.
makes a big difference for him.
Right. And playful is part of his character. So I think that that is, and she starts to really kind of cut through the layers with him. She's like, is it possible you like to be so, just be in shallow waters because
Easy.
that's easy and it's familiar? And he's kind of like, well, it might also be because I don't want anyone to know who I really am.
Yeah, he discusses with her when she points that out. She uses the analogy of, like, won't you swim deeper with me? And he says, I don't think these debutantes are after me for me. They're after me for my name and my money and all that stuff, which is something that I don't feel like we've discussed enough in Bridgerton up until this point with, like, the gold digging aspect of it,
It's
where.
so fucking obvious. Araminta actually says to her daughters at this ball, like,
Don't be
don't be
shallow.
shallow. We're just interested in his last name. Really?
Exactly. And so that it
Yikes.
just goes to show that he has reason to, and we've seen it in this episode with the debutantes, that he has reason to be cagey about that and to be like, all right, I'm not going further with these debutantes because they obviously don't care about
Well,
me.
but I do want to point out before they even get outside, Sophie says something that is so important to him because he's asking, like, well, what did that guy just not have the qualities you're looking for? And she's like, I'm not here for a husband.
Yep, I'm here to
And
enjoy
I'm
myself.
here to enjoy. She doesn't even say that, but
He
that's
says
true.
it, and she acknowledges that that's correct.
Right. And so the fact that she's not on the mark like everybody else in the room, and he really doesn't see himself as being on the mark either. Is kind of like, this is different. She's different. And that difference
Which he points it
is
out.
intriguing to him.
Yeah, he points out, oh, you're different from all the other girls I've talked to. And that's a pretty well-known, like, romance trope of you're different from all the other girls. But this is true.
It's
But in this
true.
version, it's actually true.
Yeah.
And but
Yeah,
what
she can't be out there for a husband.
I think the no, this is actually a really good point. So in season two, Eloise is broached with that exact statement by one of the suitors. From, like, I think it was like episode 4 of season 2,
Where
maybe,
she's dancing with the
where she's
guy.
dancing with the guy. He's like, you're different from all the other girls. And he's like, and she immediately takes it as an insult to her entire sex, but she says it in such, like, an insulting way, which the sentiment is there, but she says it in the most Eloise way possible, where she's insulting the guy. Either way, and when Sophie is broached with the same comment by Benedict, she points out, well, I mean, to be fair to those girls, they have put in hundreds of hours, like building these accomplishments, doing their hair, doing
Six
like
hours just to
fittings,
be
just to
noticed.
be noticed by you. Even if they're not what you're looking for, they still have put in so much effort to be noticed.
Aside, Benedict apparently acts like this is the first time he has ever thought that this was a thing.
He's
Like,
such a
I'm
guy.
you have had Daphne, who clearly put major effort into all the shit. You've had Eloise, who didn't, but deliberately didn't, so you know what she was deliberately not doing.
Francesca was off in Bath for
Okay, immediately
because she
Francesca's
was
like,
honing her accomplishments with the piano
she was in the woods. She would have a pass.
and a
I'm sorry,
piano.
at a piano. And that, whatever. But Hyacinth, so here's the other thing, and you're like, you might not have known, like, all the lessons and shit that they were doing. But you have now taken over the books, right? Like, you have been the Viscount, like, or in the shoes of the Viscount for multiple seasons now. Like, you had to cover while Antony was on his honeymoon. You had to cover while Antony's been off in India. You've had a long time to be paying for these dance masters and French tutors and all of this stuff that these girls have to learn, all the deportment, all of those things. You should know a lot better than you do what it goes into it for the girls. And for reasons that maybe these books are just trying to make him out to be like, a dickhead or a moron or whatever. He doesn't. And it takes Sophie saying it to him, which doesn't happen in the books, but I'm still like really grateful that it seems to sink in here. Like that he's suddenly like, oh, hey. I mean, this conversation happened between Daphne and Antony. They were on horseback
Yeah, in
in
season
season
one.
one, where she's like, this is my whole life. I got to find a husband. Don't fuck it up for me. And that's kind of
Because you're
what,
really fucking it up.
right? And that's kind of what Sophie's saying. Like, these girls, they aren't desperate, but this
They
is
have
their
pressure.
profession, right? Like, this is, they don't get to go to university and get a degree and all this stuff. This is it. So, this is, and they've got to find somebody like good and long term and all that stuff. So, it's a major deal.
I also love that this is coming from Sophie, who wasn't a part of those lessons in their entirety when she was younger, but she can appreciate the little that she did learn from that world, which we'll find out later. But I love that she says that, and it doesn't feel pandering to the audience by any means. It's simply to point out, hey, Benedict, be nice to people.
Stop being a
Stop
dickhead.
being a dickhead to people.
Well, but it also, I think it gives a little of his insight to him of when Violet talks to him about like the shit.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, mom might be right.
He's
As a mother,
such a
I'm not.
man. He's such a man. I would also just like to say, continuing on through that conversation, when she says to wade deeper, they both can have, and we find out about this about Sophie later, but they both feel out of place in their own homes. And obviously for different reasons, but it's still a sentiment they share. And isn't that just so sad?
It is. It's terrible. And but I feel like it is very true. Because Benedict even says it. He's like, because she's like, this is your home. You're a Bridgerton.
Here
You're
most
like,
of all.
you're, and he's like, here most of all. Like, and I think that so much of that is being second son, but also standing in Antony's place. And that, maybe that is the benefit of not having Antony present.
I do think it's adding a lot, if I'm being honest.
Like having him have some responsibility, but it's not really mine. That's an Antony problem. Like, if I fuck up something with the books, he'll fix it when he gets back. He doesn't, but he is having to feel some sense of responsibility. So I think that tension being explored for him, even in the tiny ways that we see it, and it's mostly in this first episode, are important to his character development.
I agree. Then he
But
teaches her how to dance.
the first waltz,
Oh
which
my
is why we're
gosh.
having this first waltz drink, which actually has turned out to be great, don't you
I agree.
agree?
It is so fucking cute. I'm so sorry.
This is
He
adorable.
like fake bows for her, and he's obviously like trying to keep an air of humor about this whole thing just to make her feel more at ease. And he's just like, maybe a little closer. Maybe,
Maybe
maybe.
you put your hand here,
And
and then
then
we're gonna do a
there's,
simple box step.
and so he teaches her how to do a box step and how to waltz, and she accidentally steps on his foot, and she immediately stoops down to like polish it and
Like a
buff
maid
it
would, yeah.
and like a maid would. And I love that detail that
I
they've
do
added.
too.
I think that's very important.
But other details that I love about this is that she closes her eyes,
Oh, this
and
made me so sad.
well, and this again, it's more complex than what we see in the book, which I really like. So he's like, oh, you're already dancing with closed eyes. She's like, I want to remember this. I want to be able to escape to this whenever I want to. And then like, he's like, I shouldn't kiss you, which, okay, book-wise, there's a lot of physical right now because he becomes overwhelmed by her in that moment. I would have liked to see a tiny bit more than what we saw.
I
However,
like what they do.
what happens, he kisses her on the cheek, and then he takes off her glove and kisses her the inside of her palm.
Ugh.
And
I
she's like,
don't know why that's
so
so hot, but it is.
she's so swept away with it. It's hot.
Oh, it is hot.
She's so swept away by it. And then, like, they start ringing the bell for people to take their masks off.
Before we get to that point, I would just like to mention a line from the book that I think was what captured me into that story. Whereas in this iteration of it, I don't think this line needed to really be included for me to be on board for this. I'm already on board.
You've been on
However,
board.
there's this moment that she looks him in his eyes, and she they're talking about like what they see in each other's eyes or whatever, and she says, "My soul, my very soul." I think that's really, really awesome. I say awesome, and
Right,
it hits something, you
that
know,
connection. I think
that
that,
connection.
but again, I feel like that could have been
I think it's fine that it's not.
That feeling that he is swept away more is less clear. That she is very clear. And so they ring the bell for the unmasking, and she's like, I gotta go. Very Cinderella. And she turns back and kisses him, which
I love it.
I'm going to say this right now. That is a total me move. You would not exist but for, like, some of us just saying it's time. And so she kisses him and she runs off. Very Cinderella.
I'll mention this at some. Well, I might as well mention this now. I like that they almost volley back to each other, like leading that kind of intimacy, because this is her show. Like he obviously like kissed her on the cheek and the palm, and that's really hot and everything. But she's the one who is like, "All right, I don't know when I'm going to be able to do this again." So,
Let's do it. Yeah.
and I like that she does that.
There is a fair amount of balance, especially if you read the books, and that's part of the reason we recommend it, that in many of these interactions, I'm thinking about like Penelope and Colm, like there's that sense of, I might never get a chance to do this again. I need to do it now. I need to take advantage of this opportunity to kiss this person that I'm so attracted to right now. And I love that we're seeing that, because clearly, and it's less obvious in the book that like this was Sophie initiating. I like that it is present in this. So she runs off. Benedict is slow to follow and gets distracted by Colin. And this is something I mentioned earlier in the episode where Colin and Benedict run to each other, and Colin's like, "Hey, I haven't seen you in a long time." And Benedict's like, "Gotta go." And you see on Colin, like, should I go with him? Does he need help? I should help, like a bro should. And but then he's got Penelope being surrounded by all of these gossipy, weird people that he feels like he needs to protect her. And so he stays with Penelope. We also, Benedict, all he has is the glove. And he talks, he looks at it, he hides it from his mother-in-law, though they have a chat after the ball. But what most of what we get to see is Sophie, who at this point, we did not know.
Did
She's
you mention
changed.
her running into Araminta?
Oh, as she leaves. No, we didn't. So as she is leaving, she kind of bumps
Like
into,
shoulder checks her.
shoulder checks her, and is like, "Oh shit!" And Aramis's like, "Watch where you're going." He's like, "What?" And it's a little bit like when Daphne is running out and runs into Cressida in season one. But she, there's just that moment of, fuck, oh my God, I might get caught. She leaves, Sophie does, and goes back to where she's working. You find out that she is a maid. She changes back into her maid outfit.
And she works for Araminta.
And there are two people that work with her, the cook and Alfie, who's like the best. We're going to talk about him in the
I
next
love
episode.
it.
We're going to talk about him at length in the next
I
episode.
love that he
Alfred.
changes his voice to be the footman. That's so
Stop.
fucking funny.
Stop. Alfie, and they both come in, it's like, oh. She's like, "Oh my
What's
God.
Alice Cooper's name? I keep forgetting.
I can't remember either."
Oh, I love her.
She's great, but she's like, "Oh my God, that was great." And then she gets called down to serve tea to Araminta and Rosamond and Posey, and they're snotty and horrible to
But
her.
what I love about this moment is that you see the dynamic immediately. Like, Posey is sweet to her. She tries not to be a burden, but she also still treats her like a maid, but that's because it's expected by her mother. But she's the kindest of them.
Yes.
And even Violet was able to figure that out from like a simple greeting, which I love. I love that Violet has that
Violet cuts
intuition.
through the shit.
She
Love it.
does.
Well, much like Lady Danbury, who's faster and more direct.
Yeah. And then you've got Rosamond, who is just like, well, Mr. Bridgerton was obsessed with me all night. And then Posey just goes, was he?
Was he? Really?
Was I in a different ballroom? Because he didn't fucking talk to you. And then Rosamond's like, well, he should have been. It's like, that's not the point, man. You live in a fantasy world.
Well, he would have been whoever that he was talking to can't
Can't
measure up
compare.
here.
And then what Sophie does is slam the
Slammed him.
biscuits down, which
Yeah.
I love. I love that, again, it shows her spunk and I love it.
Right, and then she gets excused. But she also, this is one of the things, one of the hints that she is so self-possessed. Araminta is calling her down for, well, why didn't you have the tea ready? Like the second we got home, and she's like, everything else has been done. Please forgive me for the delay.
Yeah.
And
She has a lot of
she's
self-control.
very measured. She doesn't raise her voice. She doesn't get defensive. She's just very, hey, I got this. You're okay. Everything's gonna be fine. And I think that is a huge part of her character as it's being portrayed in the next several episodes. It's very important. That's pretty much the episode, right?
Yeah, I mean, like you just get
So,
Lady Whistledown after that, and that's
yeah,
not really
whatever. Lady
important.
Whistledown, blah, 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 Benedict. But,
What's important is Sophie keeps her glove.
yeah. So Sophie's got one glove and Benedict has the other. Does this sound familiar? Yes, it does. So, what great, I'm sorry, what were your best parts?
Oh gosh. The private terrace. That entire sequence was perfect.
Yeah.
It's better than what I could have imagined they do for ad adapting that book sequence. I think that it's just perfect. Violet calling out Benedict. I love that she goes all the way to the fucking house and it's just like, I'll see all of your whores there. There are two of them. Like, dude, get up, go talk to your family. Like,
You're
what are you talking
expected,
about?
Bridgerton House now.
Do it now. I am still your mother.
This is a theme for Violet forever, but it is also a theme in this series. I love, love, love Violet. I'm
I
sorry.
do too. Sophie. I love Sophie. I think that she shows so much personality because I feel like it's so easy for a Cinderella archetype to be boring.
Yes.
And I think that Yaren Ha and the writers did a great job of making sure that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And she's not just a bland whatever. She has to catch his eye for a reason and not just because she's beautiful, which she is. But there's more to her than that. And I love that they showed that. Hyacinth, hilarious, inspired. The costumes, the set design, and Alfie. I love Alfie.
Alfie's not a best part for me
He'll always be a best part in my heart.
I mean he is, but he in the next episode he is just beyond.
Yeah.
So Sophie is a best part for me. I really love how they have characterized her here. It is much more complex and spunky. I love it. I love actually Penelope in this. I
Oh, I
think
do like
Penelope is
Penelope.
really very good in this.
One thing we didn't really talk about with Penelope is that she's being a lot more responsible with the kind of gossip that she is spreading. Because if it's going to ruin someone's reputation, she takes a pause and is like, no.
Well, right. And like she could run away from the ball because Colin's like, we can get out of here. And she's like, I'm gonna have to face them eventually. They're all wanting to have a piece of me. Let's just
Including you.
including you. And I love they actually show her writing like after you know that she and Colin got it on, and then he's asleep and she's like, all right, I gotta write my
Her hair's a
column.
bit tussled.
I love Penelope in this. I love Benedict because Benedict being a hoe is whatever, but Benedict on his own, I think.
I didn't include Benedict, but I'll add him as well.
But Benedict and Sophie together,
Oh, they're so
fantastic.
good.
Penelope and Colin together, love it. Violet, fucking icon. I
Love her.
adore Violet. I think that she's just amazing. And I didn't include Hyacinth,
You
which
should
is
have.
amazing, but I love Hyacinth, of course.
Yeah.
So what were your worst parts?
Worst parts, Benedict being a man whore and ignoring
Yeah,
his family. I do think that is taking things a bit far because I don't think that there really was a reason why he should do that. I think he's trying to separate himself from his family because he feels the responsibility that Antony usually feels. And he still wants to feel his like playful persona and still
it's
feel
hard.
like the second son, where while and I think this is actually a great development for his character, considering the fact that they're not going to have Jonathan Bailey in a lot of this season. They're using it to ha include in, like impact his character growth, and I think that actually is working really well in their favor. But still, him being a man whore and shirking his duties is still ridiculous. The queen needs to stop. It's such a weird dichotomy with the queen where it's like she's fangirling over Lady Whistledown while simultaneously being like, "Well, tell me everything before it hits the papers." It's like, isn't that part of the fun to find out with everybody else? I guess she just wants to, she's
Be
trying to
special.
exercise a lot of
She's special.
control. And she's
And
doing that a lot this season.
again, they're probably backstory reasons, which if we had Cory Monteith, whatever his name is,
Milchrist?
it
Malchrist.
I would watch that all day long.
I would too.
But
India and Corey? Fuck yeah.
anytime.
10.
But
Anyway,
we're not getting that. Oh, sorry, go.
Araminta. Oh.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck
Well,
you. And
fucking good.
Rosamond. Fuck you.
Yeah, so I didn't really use Aramis and Rosamund. I should,
You
and
should.
I think that they are definitely things that I find annoying. The Lady Danbury, Queen Charlotte, this is going to be a subplot that I don't really love. And it's not because I don't like the characters. It's just I feel like we're spending too much time on it. This speech that Lady Danbury gives about, I'm going to leave, it repeats itself multiple times. I'm going to leave. 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 No. Yeah, it's very wordy for, and it eats up a lot of airtime, which
Well,
we
so does
could.
a lot of the queen scenes because, like, in the very first queen scene, there's a lot of silence of, like, oh, she's late. It's like, why are we doing this?
Yeah, it's just dumb.
What does that add to anything?
And
That she's
I
impatient,
agree.
we know that.
I agree. I find Eloise annoying in this episode. I find Eloise annoying a lot. I did not include Araminta and Rosamund. I should have. They're terrible. Benedict being a man whore. So I didn't write it down. Benedict being a man whore, as anyone who's listened to our season three or season two,
Or season one.
or season one knows, I fucking hate this whole Mr. I'm experimenting Benedict. Now, I don't hate it in an intellectual concept kind of way. What I
How
don't,
they execute it.
it's just like there's so much time. And I also feel like I had issues with resolving that character development with what we see with him and Sophie. I still have issues with that. So far, in these first four episodes, I'm saying this up front, I am not seeing how they are resolving that exploration for him with the monogamy he shows for Sophie. And I really would like to see that confronted in some way. I don't expect that it's going to be.
No.
The source material doesn't have this because it doesn't have any of the massive man-whore elements
He's
that we
rakish, but
see.
he's not. He has a reputation for being rakish, but he.
It's not anything like this.
No.
And so I'm
I
not
could see, yeah.
sure that they're going to reconcile this in a way that I find emotionally satisfying. So yeah, I got problems with it. I did not say in my best part, set design, costumes, music. We did not talk about the music. The music is fantastic.
Yeah.
Is consistently
Oh,
fantastic.
Sophie's theme. Oh, I
Sophie's
loved it.
theme is beautiful. I feel like there are a couple of cover choices that their placement, I understand, but I don't really like the way the beats actually come out. in later episodes. That's not true in this episode. And that's not true in the next episode
Yeah, the
either.
next episode is like my
It's
favorite.
perfect. It's perfect.
It's like a confident one, like
The confident one
the
seems
confident one
very
is perfect.
unfucking
This
believably
next
boring.
one is also perfect.
Yeah. So there are some excellent choices. It's kind of like bad guy in season one.
Oh yeah.
Always
Oh yeah.
excellent.
Or what's that? Was there one for her, for Daphne coming down
I'm
and her
sure. I'm sure.
wildest dreams also worked for
Yeah.
me. And I think season one probably had the best placement.
Probably. But whatever. Not the point. What grade did you give this?
I gave it an A.
I gave it an A minus.
I was
It
gonna
might
give it an
be
A
an A.
minus. I
It
think
might be
it's
an
an
A.
A. After discussing it, I feel like to a certain degree, I wasn't as hyped up for this season as I was for the last season, especially
You
with
are
the
such a
part one.
Colin fan. You're such a Luke Newton fan. You know it.
I'm also a Luke Thompson fan, but
It's not the
it's
same.
not the same, but it's also like I had a lot of faith in them handling this season because of who they
It's
had
not
built up.
complicated.
Well, that, but also it's like who they built up as a character. I think that they were going to make the right changes to the book because in the book we'll discuss how different things go. But I think that in general, what they did in this first episode, again, with how it impacts the rest of this season, is so important. And I think that it did a really good job. And also the casting job, fuck yes.
The casting's been
Can I
phenomenal.
just say, like, the whole new, all of the new casts that have been brought in for this season, superb.
Yeah,
I mean, they're
I agree.
also the casting are always on point.
I mean, honestly, we have had amazing actors pretty uniformly. I mean, I just don't think that
I don't think there's
any.
been any people who have really
I don't know that you can
done
go back and listen
badly.
to our backlog. I don't even know
I don't think I've
if
ever
I've ever
complained
complained.
about the
I
acting.
don't think I ever have either. Occasionally, well, not occasionally. Sometimes I'm troubled by adaptations, writing, some of the music use, various things. But there's so much good in the acting and the production value that it overcomes a lot.
It really does help.
You really just like, oh, damn, this is really good. So,
And that's the feeling I'm getting right now. And I think that's
I
worth
agree.
an A for me
Yeah.
because not all of
That's
these.
okay. That's fair. All right.
Yeah. And because I think it's the fact that even though I knew what I was expecting or like what to expect from this episode, that it still was able to sweep me away into the fantasy of what they were building with Benedict and Sophie, especially on the private terrace. Like again, it adapted enough to make it a little bit different to make it even better. And I think I would make
I would have
I
liked to kiss on a more prolonged
what
kiss
I
in
was
the book.
expecting from him taking off her glove was something more akin to the book of like starting at her palm and then working his way up her arm. But I have no complaints of like. And what I also love about it is that he's so persistent in trying to figure out more about her instead of just accepting the fact that she's not going to tell him. He constantly asks about, hey, well, but what's your name? Or how, if I'm not to know your name or who your parents are, how am I supposed to find you? Or.
I want to point this out too. Like Benedict that we've seen, and I'm talking about series Benedict now as opposed to book Benedict, because you don't see him in all of these romantic situations in books. In the situations we've seen him in the show, like with what's her name from last season, and
Oh,
all of
Tilly.
it. Yeah. You don't see him really asking those kind of personal questions because he doesn't
Caring.
care. He cares about this woman. And he says, you're the most intriguing person I've met. But that could mean a lot of things. Like, oh, you're the most intriguing person I've met today. Like in the last 5 minutes.
What I love about it is, sorry, not to cut you off, but just going through a quick catalog of the people he's been with these past few seasons. The first season, he was experimenting with like threesomes and Madame Delacroix and all that stuff.
Wife of Charles Blake.
Yeah,
Hello.
crazy. And then season two, he meets the woman who wants to be an artist and poses as a nude model at the Artist Academy. And that's akin to a Sophie-esque kind of thing of like lower class, but so is Madame Delacroix. And then the only person that has kind of broken that mold was Lady Tilly last season, but she was also a widow, so she was still kind of outside of society, and she wanted to do threesomes with her and her friend.
The
So,
threesome thing seems to have been a theme for him too, which is an interesting. Again, that the resolution of those, and those are things that have been tacked on in the series that did not exist in the books. So
I think there might
that's an
be,
interesting
I
question.
think it might be an element of him wanting things to be impersonal and there being a distance between them, because that's kind of a, unfortunately, it's kind of a given for those things where it's like when you're with one person, that's more intimate than being with multiple people. And that's just how things are.
Yeah, I
But
guess that's true.
I think that there's an element of like him trying new things and seeing how things work. And he still didn't want to stay with Tilly. So when she wanted more, he stepped back because, again, getting too personal. But now that he wants something personal, I think that he's more willing to make, I guess, sacrifice. It's not even a sacrifice, really, but make those changes to adapt to
I'd
that.
like to see that explored more overtly.
And I agree. And when you brought that up, I was like, oh yeah, they haven't really talked about that at all, other than the fact that he'll go to a club and have sex with a guy at some point. But it's just like at one point, but it's just like, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's a lot more to talk about with this whole season. I'm really looking forward to, especially this first half. We are not even getting started. We have barely scratched the surface, people. We hope that you join us and
Cheers.
cheers.